You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast for the week of May 22nd. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. Good. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness is right, man. You got me all worried. Don't worry me.
Yeah, I've had a couple of hospital visits the last week, but I'm good. It's just kind of growing old kind of nonsense.
Oh, great. I got stuff to look forward to.
You do have stuff to look forward to. Aren't you the lucky one?
The
evil smile I've got going on.
All right. Well, nothing evil about this week. Let's get right into it because we've got a boatload of things to talk about. On this week's show, we've got Ryan McBroom of the Carp as the guest. We're going to discuss MPB's latest fashion fart. We're going to look at the passing of a legend, and we're going to close things out with some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so I went to Tokyo Dome on May 13th and got to shake hands with Ryan McBroom. That was fun, and he's really a nice guy. I think you listeners who have been listening for a while and heard him on the show last year remember that he's the guy who took the time out to download an app on his phone so that we could communicate and I could do the interview. So that was spectacular, and he recognized me right away. I just said, "Hey, Ryan," and he looked over and says, "Hey." I don't know if he remembered my name, but he definitely remembered my face, so that makes me think he had a listen to JBW at that time, which was really nice. And he's in his second season with the Carp, and as I've said here, he's a tremendous guy, and he's hitting enough average wise I think that it's not a distraction. But as of Thursday, he was second in the Central League in RBIs. And while some folks want to discredit the ability to drive in runs, I don't, being a Dragons fan. So if you walk a 90-foot stretch in Dragons shoes, you know how important that distance is, especially if they get to third base. But this is not about the Dragons, right? And it's not about me. Anyway, he and Matt Davidson, whom I chatted with also that day, I think they're putting on a good show for the Carp, and they're contributing regularly to a team that probably doesn't have a big time kind of a player right now on the mound or maybe in the lineup, but they're doing well. I like the way Yosuke Kikuchi is swinging the bat, and I think this team is headed toward where you talked about in the Central League prediction show and had my jaw dropping open. Was it second place or third place you had him in? I think it was second place, right?
I couldn't tell you. Second or third?
Yeah, somewhere up there.
I think third, but I don't know. I think
it was second because my jaw did drop open. I don't know that it would have dropped open for third place, but it's no surprise that everything seems to be working right under a new manager, and your prediction's looking good. So anyway, let's have a listen to Ryan McBroom. All right, it's a pleasure to have Ryan McBroom on the show in person. How you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's finally nice to meet you, shake your hand, and look you in the eye and say hello. Been a long time since we've been able to do this, so I'm always excited doing the interviews now. How's this year for you compared to last season?
Yeah, it's definitely an easier adjustment, that's for sure. The team's pretty comfortable with each other this year. Last year is my first year, so it was kind of a new deal. Everything was new. Coming back this year for the second go-round, it's a lot more comfortable. The guys are just comfortable around each other, so it's been fun.
All right, and how about your numbers? How satisfied were you with the season you had last year? And what are you trying to do this year?
Right. Oh, yeah, we're never satisfied. Always trying to improve each year and win games, most importantly, man. When you're winning, usually your numbers are there, so that's kind of been my focus as of right now. And moving forward, that's what it will be.
After the season, did you evaluate yourself and try to focus on some things to work on, and what were they?
Yeah, definitely. Mainly just kind of the basics, man. It's kind of hard to train back home for Japanese style, but I kind of had an idea of how to attack pitchers. The most important thing, just relaxing and making sure my body's moving properly when I'm hitting. So that's pretty much what I focused on.
Now, how has the managerial change been?
Oh, it's been great, man. It's been great. Last year was great as well, but this year the guys too are just they understand us, man. Their team, their players, coaches. They just understand what we're going through, how we're feeling that day, and they're really easy to play for. So it's been great.
Now you probably never saw what I play as a player, but I saw him a lot, and I interviewed him a few times, and he's a very calm guy, very nice guy.
Yeah.
I can't see him really getting or voicing displeasure with anything, but I guess you have to do that as a manager. So mm-hmm. How much of that have you seen?
Oh yeah, I haven't seen much of it. He's super relaxed, easy manager to play for. He wants to win. He knows how to win, most importantly. And it's been really fun so far this year, so I'm looking forward to keep going.
Now, what are the differences that you see between last year's roster and this year's roster?
It's pretty similar, to be honest. With the addition of Davidson this year, it's been great to have.
You think?
Yeah, it's been awesome to have for me personally and for the team. He's doing a great job, and the roster so far is pretty much been the same, to be honest. But guys are better this year. I've seen improvements from everybody. It's been really fun.
That's what I always look for, is you never know what second-year player, maybe even third-year player, is going to make a jump. Mm-hmm. The light goes on. The mental part is it slows down for them, and they get better. Did you see anything like that happening in spring training?
Oh, yeah, definitely. All the young guys, man. All the young guys, they work their tails off. And they come out here and they produce, too. When they're put late in the game, either on defense or a pinch hit, they just come through. It's been fun to see.
Now, you talked about Matt a second ago. How do you guide him through the odyssey that is that first year in MPV?
Yeah. It's definitely more of a mental challenge, because you play a certain way your whole life. You eat certain foods. You have a certain schedule your whole life. And then all of a sudden, it kind of just switches on you. And you got to be open to it. You got to be mentally prepared to go through that grind when no one's there to talk to. And so I've kind of more tried to prepare him mentally about the big changes, and then the game will come along with that. So.
Now, as far as the carp, now, how do you describe what the lineup is like to friends and family back home when they ask you, what's the team like?
Yeah. No, my main thing is just guys know how to hit. They know how to put the ball in play. They don't strike out. They hit super balanced. Everybody's so balanced, and everybody can just hit any pitch. I mean, you can bounce a ball up there, and guys are going to hit it. Like, Nishikawa's going to hit that. And it's been really, really awesome to be a part of and to watch, too. It's fun.
Now, there seem to be no easy nights in the Central League. Even the lowly Dragons, because they have a bad record, they have good pitching and defense. They're hard to beat. So how do you approach the everyday grind?
Yeah, I mean, anyone can win in this league at any given point. I mean, there's six teams, and it's just a constant battle all the way until September. So that's how it was last year, and that's how it's going to be this year. And we're prepared for it.
The Bay Stars, however, are off to a really good start. I mean, they just picked up Trevor Bauer, put him in the mix. They've got good pitching anyway. So how much do you view them as a favorite for the Central League, or do you even pay attention to that stuff this early?
Yeah, no, it's way too early for me. Obviously, they're a good team, but there's a lot of good teams in this league, and anyone can take off at any given point. And it's only May, man. I don't usually look at that until about late August, to be honest with you, because anything can happen, really. It's just a constant fight every single day.
Now, how is it playing in a small market city like Hiroshima? You must be recognized everywhere.
Yeah. You're pretty, you stand out a lot. There's not too many foreign visitors, so they recognize me, and the city's phenomenal, and the people are great, very welcoming. I love it there.
So how much are you a believer in momentum? Because you guys had a really big momentum win. I mean, if you're a fan and you're looking, yeah. You're like, how much are you a believer in that carrying over to, like, next day or next series or anything?
Yeah, for sure. Momentum's huge. That's in every sport, too. But mainly here, yeah. With the off day every Monday, it's hard to kind of continue that momentum. But, you know, when you can win weeks at a time, that's kind of how I like to look at it. Just each week, try and win as much as you can, so...
How much do you bask in a win like that, or do you just try to forget it as soon as you wake up the next morning? How do you approach that?
It's tough when you got a day game. When you have a night game and then a day game the next day, you don't have too much time to celebrate, but you're right back at the ballpark, so I'm going to go ahead and try and win today.
All right, last question. Mm-hmm. What's your other sport that you like to watch?
Oh, football.
NFL, all right. Yeah. What team?
Giants fan.
A Giants fan.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, I think I'm going to cut this video off.
Come on now.
All right. Well, good luck. Stay healthy. Appreciate it.
Thanks. See you guys.
All right, so take that. Late August, not just August, but late August is when he's worried about the standings, because anything can happen. And I know that players have to think that way, whether it's true or not, you have to think you can come back from last place or from wherever you are in the standings to either win or get in the playoffs. So that's par for the course. I wouldn't be worried about the standings too much either. But anyway, what stuck out to you in this chat?
Well, obviously Ryan's one of these guys is going to take it one game at a time and, you know, focus on the game ahead. He's got the baseball patter down. Now, before I get to that a little bit, I did have one question listening to it, and I thought, when he said it's hard to train for Japanese pitching back home, I mean, that, yeah, I think that's true. But when you're on your own,
mm-hmm.
if you're, you know, for any pitching other than focusing, you know, what he said, focusing on how you move and how you feel and, you work with pitching machines and this and that, as I know some guys do, a lot of guys do in the off season. But to me, it's hard for me to see, maybe I'm missing something. It's hard for me to see how, unless you're playing, you know, unless you've got professional level pitchers throwing to you, you know, throwing live BP, I can't really see how you were going to prepare for anything except those, you know, fundamental physical things.
Well, remember, we've talked to some players now. We know there's a lot of pickup games back home, and maybe he's talking about that, and that the maybe. Fact that most of the guys are American or Western guys, and it's just different from the Japanese. So maybe
I was thinking that too, but I don't know. So anyway, so that was interesting. And then we get to the fun stuff, which was, well, I guess the other thing was when he talked about what's difficult coming in Japan. Now, I often ask players this question, you know, how hard is the off the field transition? And most guys really don't want to talk about it too much.
Yeah, they don't get into that depth about
for him,
it.
But for him to say, you know, how big it was, all the things that go on off the field what a speed bump that was, I thought, somewhat not refreshing but different than the normal pattern. But he made up for that with all the other stuff, like his manager knows how to win. And I'm going, let's find a guy who can manage who doesn't know how to win.
Hey, that's a skill, man. Look at my team.
Well,
there's a guy who really doesn't know how to win.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's one of the best baseball expressions. Because I remember when 1995, when Bobby Valentine managed the Marines, and he took this team that had been basically a third, fourth, fifth, you know, distant third, fourth, fifth place team for about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in the pennant race until about the last 10 days of the season. And they were in second, and they finished, I think the Cebu Lions nipped him for third, for a second, at the end of the very last week of the season. But people like one of the guy, like Ira Stevens, who was helping me do my annual analytic guides to Japanese baseball at the time, I said, "Oh, the Marines now know how to win. They're gonna, you know," like. But of course, what usually happens when you take a team that's a mediocre team and they have really good results one year, some of those results are going to be some element of that is just going to be random things that are beyond the team's control, and teams will play over their head because, you know, some they'll catch breaks that are beyond their control, and when those things, you know, regress to the mean, you find out that it wasn't that they learned how to win, was that, you know, they played well and things went their way. And then when things didn't go their way, they forgot how to win. But it's a pretty common, you know, it's a pretty common pattern. But I did like that. And the last thing I would want to say is that you can tell that Ryan is an infielder because he knows how to cover all his bases. Because, you know, you asked him, you know, how's the new manager? Oh, it's really great. Oh, this guy's really great. Oh, but the last one was good too. So yeah, yes. Like that was the cover your behind kind of response. I don't want to say nothing about the bad manager. That's, you know, that's my job. And I don't think he, well, I don't think he was a great manager, but again, they chose him. And, you know, and if you wanted to do it, or you felt obliged to do it, whether you had any skill at it or not is really not the question. It's the team's, you know, that's like, if the team hires somebody whose qualifications are suspect, it's not the guy whose qualifications are subject who are suspect who is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to blame the individual. It's not everybody's cut out to be a manager. Some right. guys know it and some guys suspect it, but yeah. So I as harsh as my language was towards Shinji Sasaoka, it was never meant as a, you know, it sounded bad and it was kind of soundbite snarkism, but I didn't mean it personally. I don't really think, you know, if he's not a particularly good manager, well, join the crowd. A lot of people aren't. And the fact that the Carp wanted to keep him for 3 years is, you know, that's the Carp's fault, not his.
Gotcha. Yeah, now, for some of you who don't follow me on Twitter or don't remember that we do have a YouTube channel, this interview is up on the YouTube channel. So do have a look if you want to get a close-up of the handsome Ryan McBroom. But yeah, I'm with you. I think a lot of times when we ask these questions, and I try to keep my questions, I try not to lead the witness as much as possible. I'll throw in some follow-up sometimes, but Jim's making a face. But I actually don't try to lead the witness. And I wasn't asking him about the past manager.
Right, I know.
My focus was on the current manager, and he did backtrack and say that, and I did catch that as well. But I was just impressed with Ryan, because he asked me how long it would take to do the interview. And I said, 5 to 10 minutes, it's kind of up to you. And I prepared all but one of the questions I had asked him. One was a follow-up, right? So I had prepared all the questions. I think we got through it in about almost 7 minutes, wasn't mm-hmm. it? So he did a good job of getting through. But yeah, I think, you know, sometimes we'll ask these questions that might sound like we're asking about one thing and we're not. And, you know, I asked him specifically about how it was under the new manager, and he gave me information about the previous manager, and, you know, definitely wasn't where I was going. My question was, I think, was specifically, have you seen him get on people when he needs to? And he really didn't answer that aspect of the question. Because again, and I told him, I said, I've never seen this guy do anything but laugh and smile. I was watching the game the other night, the Bay Stars game that they played, and I think Shugo Maki hit a couple home runs in that game, and
the Bay Stars came from, they blew their lead. The Carp blew their lead.
Okay. Well, yes, they blew the lead, but it wasn't that big a lead, and it was early in the game. But yeah, Shugo Maki hit a couple home runs and they end up winning the game. But in the beginning, I forgot who was doing the color commentary on that game, but that person said the whole Carp atmosphere is just so different this year. Everyone's loose. Everyone's free and easy to just go out there and compete. And this color analyst didn't say it, but I picked up on that. And I'm thinking that's why we're seeing Kikuchi have this, I wouldn't say another, you know, I'm not dead yet season kind of a thing, because he is 33, but he certainly looks better than he has in the past couple of years. And that might be injury related as well, but he looks better on offense and defense. I mean, it's not just one aspect of his game, and he looks like the perfect number three hitter in Japan right now, a guy who can do whatever is needed at the time. If you need an extra base hit, he can do that. If you just need a guy to go up there and battle and work a walk with the bases loaded, he can do that. He just looks great. And he's, again, fielding, making plays, top plays of the day, or web gems, or whatever you want to call them, in the field. He's just back. And the team is just operating. It just looks different. They might not like I said in the opening, it doesn't seem like they have any really dynamic star out there in particular. There's nobody like a Tom Brady on the team who's going to like come up with some great plays and lead him to victory. Even Allen Curry, who has had a spectacular start to his season, didn't have a spectacular start the other day, but has had a spectacular start to the season, isn't really like an ace level. He's not seen as an ace level guy. He can maybe be that this year, but this team just, you know, and I'm hoping you can do some kind of study with the number of players used on the various teams through the first, what are we, almost at 8 weeks? Mm-hmm. Because it just seems like I've seen so many roster moves, so many different guys come up from the farm and get a start on almost every team, practically every team. I haven't seen that this early on in a season that I can remember. So maybe you can check that.
You mean with pitchers or?
I mean with position players, pitchers. Mm. It just seems like we've seen so many guys, so many. I mean, some of it is injury related. Some of it is
performance related. Well, we typically have, you know, there's typically two or three teams that get more than their share of injuries.
Sure.
And so we do see that. And then you've got teams where Hudson Rehara is the manager, and that's just a thing.
Yeah, it's just a thing. I mean, we're going to, we haven't entered the eighth week. This show comes out, it drops on Monday. That's the eighth week.
Yeah,
right?
The Carp maybe not, but the Tigers certainly haven't been bouncing around with, you know, bringing up the laundry list of new players all the time. I mean, they did
not all the time, but they have their share as well. There have been a couple guys.
A few.
But, so I'm thinking this might be different. But anyway, my favorite phrase that when Ryan said, I think when I asked him about his personal numbers, he said, when you win, I think the numbers are there. And a lot of the things that these players say to us, a lot of them, it's just code for I can't tell you that, or I don't do these things or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of them, is that, you know, like I said, driving in a run or being able to produce, now not necessarily a hit, but hit behind a runner and helping a runner move over and getting that fly ball when there's a runner at third and there's only one out or no outs. Those are, you know, that obviously the pitcher's doing his best to prevent the run scoring. So is so are the defensive players. Sometimes the manager pulls the infield in. There are all kinds of things that can happen and to make it, if you want to say it, more difficult, but more challenging or just different. You know, the situation changes. So your approach is different and what the pitcher's trying to do is different. But I think that's true for the most part. If you're winning, that the numbers are there, but I think if you're winning too, it's there's a lot less pressure. You know, you don't have to carry a team, and that can be better, and it's better for everyone. So, you know, I really enjoyed talking to him, and like I said, did meet Matt Davidson as well, and hope to have him on the show sometime soon, and got to chat with him. He's from Southern California as well, so we talked about both being from the same. Sort of being from the same area, because, you know, I was not really born in California, so I'm not Californian, but lived a long time in the city next to, lived in the city next to his. But in terms of the Carp, I talked about Kuri. These guys kind of are two surprises for me because we didn't see them coming back.
Yeah, Kuri's funny because, of course, I'm dying to go and talk to the Carp because I haven't, he's one of my, you know, kind of, he's just been, I don't know. I have this relationship with players who are usually just, they're very young, but we sort of strike up a relationship sometimes. And Curry was like that. He was a second round draft choice. And I knew his father was an American. And of course we share a name.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to ask, you know, so we just started talking about little things, very tiny things, but, you know, he went through a lot of ups and downs, and it was all, he was, you know, I always was there checking up on him, and he was always coming over to say hi. And you know, so it's always been like that. So I'm really keen to talk to him because the last couple of years he's had this he had a kick. He sort of reminds me in a funny way about, not quite, but like Kazuhiro Kiyohara. Mm-hmm. Every year, Kazuhiro Kiyohara was this big, very, very powerful slugger, would decide that he was going to train like a professional wrestler, or like a professional, an NFL player, or like a professional golfer, or whatever, you know, or like a jockey, you know, whatever it was. Every year was different.
Bad training.
Yeah, and it would be like he just had no clue. And or I think part of it is the, you know, Ichiro Suzuki says something very obvious about training. He says, you can't build a career in one day. It takes baseball players, human beings are like trees. They don't get big overnight. Everything is incremental and steady growth. You can't be great doing it one day. It's something you have to continue at. And he would be constantly, every year he'd be going in a different direction. It was like he had no clue of that. He didn't seem to quite grasp that, you know, that he, I mean, yeah, of course, sometimes you need changes, and big changes sometimes produce big results. But sure, with him, every year was something different. And Alan Curry's given us a little of that, because 2 years ago in camp, he was the guy who was throwing the 300-pitch bullpens.
Mm-hmm.
and he started out great, and he actually had a pretty decent season. And then this year, he trained in the States, and he come back, and he's going, you know, these 20-pitch bullpens are the way to go for me. And he's looked actually much better. I mean, he's looked much more consistent this year. So I don't know if that's the reason. And, you know, I don't want to, I used Kiyohara as kind of an extreme example, and I don't mean to cast aspersions, but I do by default, and sometimes by poor choices of language. But I just wonder about that, you know, and how much of that whipsawing is sort of intentional, or how some of it's just trial and error. You know, he's getting closer to where he wants. I'm sure, my guess is he's getting closer to where he wants to go. But on the other hand, he's also a graduate of Ajie University, which is a notoriously brutal university for its baseball program, and produces people like Nobuhiro Matsuda, who are extreme. You know, just like extreme, not a, of heaping physical training and abuse upon themselves, which begs the question of how Yasuaki Yamasaki ever got fat. But
hashtag high.
But anyway, but yeah, I'm curious about that. I think Daichi Osera is still their ace, and Masato Morishita.
Is he though?
Yeah, I think he's it's just consistency.
Yeah, he's a quality pitcher for sure. He just hasn't been that shutdown guy.
No.
I think he has had, let's say, 2-3 seasons at that kind of elite-ish level. But he really hasn't been a frontline guy who we might expect to be the driving force to them getting to the Japan.
No, I think you're right about that. I mean, nobody's going to, except for when he was in college and they asked him, you know, they tagged him to play for the national team with all the NPB guys, and he was a hot draft item.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been, he's been consistently good. Like, you know, I would say he's in the, you know, he's in the top 10 of Central League, you know, just of Jap of NPB pitchers pretty regularly, consistently. I mean, he's not the guy, he's sort of a Hiromi Ito kind of pitcher,
mm-hmm,
who isn't going to strike out a bunch of guys. He's not a big power pitcher, but he's a big, you know, he does throw hard, and he does command his pitches, and he, you know, he does the things he wants to do. And he, you know, it's a sort of a percentage game. He's not going to blow anybody away. Rarely will he blow people away. But he's been consistent for a fairly long time. Of course, Masato Morishita is the guy they really want. and he was hurt last year and had surgery. He had shoulder cleaning surgery, and he's back from that now. But no, they're good. And as far as the start, as soon as you said the Carp talking about lots of different players, obviously it's the starting pitching, which has been very stable this year.
Yeah.
It's Hiroki Tokuda, who is like that entire second tier of Japanese pitchers who has fantastic stuff at times.
Yeah, on any given night.
Who has fantastic stuff. And when on those nights when two of those pitches are working and they can command it, just assume he's going to allow a run in seven innings and get a win.
Mm-hmm.
But those games are, twice a month or once a month. And then mm-hmm. when he doesn't have it, you wonder, why is this guy pitching?
Well, yeah, speaking of why is this guy pitching, has been Yoji Kuribayashi, who has struggled, and they had to send him down to the farm. So I don't know if it was all injury related or all just performance related, but he had been struggling for sure. And he actually was a heavy traffic or high traffic pitcher last year, but he just got out of it. He got out of it. And I think I mentioned that on the show that you're getting on base, you're getting a few hits here and there, but he's just able to make that key pitch and get out of situations and save the game. Well, he wasn't saving and he was having some trouble. So,
He had back, I think it was back issues in the spring that scratched him from the national team. And it's interesting that you mentioned the heavy traffic because I don't remember. I was actually looking for that quote from Hideki Kuriyama at one point when he was talking about him early on in camp. And he said, I got him because he's a guy I want with guys on base because he's used to it. But he's got his splitter is probably one of the best in Japan, and I think he might have said the same thing about Taisei Ota too. But I never had that impression from Taisei Ota, but he had Taisei Ota was a guy who had game like that, every third game would be one where he put three guys on.
Sure. Yeah. And he might even give up a run too. But I think this guy Takuya Yasaki has been mm-hmm. thrust into the save role or the closer role, and he's a seventh year guy, and I really hadn't seen much of him, to be honest, throughout the years off and on, but that might be an issue. But if Kuribayashi gets his health in order and is able to come back and resume that role, I like the way the Carp looks. So it'll be fun to talk to Matt next time, or any of they have a number of guys on the team I wanted to talk to, but I just wanted to go up to Ryan and say hi and meet him.
Sure, I guess the Carp, in addition to the guys I know, one of the Carp guys and Shogo Sakakura, who I love. As you know, and one of the guys I've never talked to is Ryuhei Matsuyama because he looks, he's like one of these older players who, if he wasn't wearing a baseball uniform, you might mistake him for a greengrocer.
Yeah, well, I think. Do you remember? I fell in love with the persona of him. I have talked to him. He was not very nice, but I don't care. I still love him. He's this guy who just toiled in the minors for a while and then finally made it to the top team. And has been a fixture, but off and on, right? He's such a defensive liability, apparently, mm-hmm. that they can't really put him out there regularly, but he's become an ace pinch hitter for them right mm-hmm. now. And he is just money against, righties, lefties, and late game situations. They feel very comfortable bringing him up there. And I did see him the other day. I wanted to talk to him, but he was not nice to me the first time. So I'm like, I'm just going to leave you alone. And
so much of that is
have affection from you from afar. Yeah.
So much of that is vibe, because I'll tell you, you and Jason and I, we've all got guys who we click with, and then guys who are like our kryptonite for us. And then I have one of those guys, and Jason will be walking up and they'd be like twins separated at birth all of a sudden. And I'm going, wow, What's it? What's going on there?
Yeah, Matsuyama. I saw him after. He was almost in tears. He had got the game winning hit at Seibu Dome in a, I think when it was called Prince something or other. I don't remember. So I just keep calling it Seibu Dome. That's the name of the training station, people. So anyway, he was in the Hero interview and he was almost in tears talking about how he had worked so hard to get to this spot and it felt really good and blah, blah, blah. So I just kind of had affection for him since then. So I've been watching. Remember, I told you, I don't have these players who are not high profile players like you do. You find a guy and you just stick to him. You're like, you're all over a particular player. I don't have very many, but Matsuyama
is like
one
fungus,
of my guys.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Hard well, to clean me off.
Let's clean you off and make a four-seam transition here and talk about the passion for fashion up in Hokkaido. So this past week, the Fighters players were wearing their white stripes reverse Seven Nation Army sexy Elvis duds. Now, I know you don't understand half of that stuff, Jim, because you don't know who the white stripes are, and Seven Nation Army is one of their songs, but you do know Elvis. I was calling these the Ultraman alternative jerseys because they had the collars, the red and the white and all this other stuff. And of course, Big Boss is supposed to have been buried, but the Phantom of the Escon lives on because reports of his demise have been greatly exaggerated. We know that Big Boss, and I'm going to call him that, Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the manager of the Fighters, because these are all him. He helped with the design and looks like a set of checkers crashed into Elvis impersonator who was on crack. I mean, these things are ugly. Can I convey that? Are you getting that? I don't know how much of these uniforms you saw during the week, but they're vomit-inducing. They dress the players like clowns, and I'll be upset.
Honest, I don't like them, but I know so many people who do. And so, you know, that's personal taste as far as I'm concerned. But I'll tell you, I do like the caps. I think they're very cool.
I can't even see what's going on to like anything. There's just too much. I mean,
is too much. They make, you know, trying to think of a thing. You know, they make it's like what was the line from You Got Mail? That those uniforms make espresso nervous.
I like that.
And
I don't remember that.
They are very busy. They're like a bus crashing in high speed into a gelato stand. There's all these colors going on the and but I as far as they're basically red, white, and black. And
well,
they're
not much white. There's not enough white on there to.
No, not enough much white. Of course, red isn't one of the Fighters' colors, so that's kind of interesting. But you know, teams and colors in Japan—they sell shirts. You know, the teams sell shirts, and if they sell shirts that aren't like the regular ones, people are going to buy them. And
I know
I have
oh,
some.
God, if I see one of these up close, I really am going to have to carry a barf bag.
I personally like the collar, actually. I think it's very cool. I mean, it's very old. It's very 19th century.
Well, so you know,
I don't mind the collar.
I did think about that, but then I saw, I think it was Yuki Nomura who was batting at the time, and he you could see him turn, and the collar was hitting him on the neck. And I thought for a second, that has to be a distraction, because at this point, these young players have never played with a collar. Okay, not one of them. And that has to be a distraction for him. And in fact, he has been struggling so much to the point, Mr. Nomura, that they had to take him out of the lineup on Friday because he was just looking so bad. He came back today and had a couple of hits, including a two-run double, but today being Saturday. But he, you know, these things just have to be. And their record, they have a winning record in these uniforms now, I heard, or
yeah,
someone pointed out. But NPB really has to step in. I'm tired of this. I'm tired. No, it's not just them. It's the Oryx playing the Lions, and they both have dark blue jerseys. So
now that definitely
those kinds of things we've really got to regulate these things because to me, when we have the same color jerseys out there dueling, it's like oh please, These designs cannot be reckless, and so that when we flip on the channel or we flip on the game, because I'm a zapper, I'm going around from game to game, I want to know who's batting, and I should be able to know by what the teams are wearing, who's batting, you know, and I can't tell. And you know, the other thing about these uniforms with the fighters is they've got the first and last names of the players on there. So I'm not a big number guy. I don't memorize players' numbers anymore. I memorize them by the way they move and by their physique and by other things. But I sometimes read the name on the back of this jersey because that helps. Well, you can't see them. There's so many letters, and it goes around. Mm. It wraps around that. It's really it's horrible. So they're not functional. The CARP uniforms right. are the same. The CARP ones, you can't see the names.
Yeah,
on.
I call
you
those
can't even
the,
see the numbers.
I call those the killer tomato uniforms because they're red.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. What a
they're
movie.
Red on red, and the fighters are now the red and black attack.
Yeah, so no, they're the Elvis checkers. That's what okay. they are. It's a checkers set.
Ah, red and white checkers, like a checkerboard. Yeah, I get it.
Yes,
and black, yeah. red, white, and black. Ah,
and
I get
the,
it. I
and
get
the
it.
Triangular
I
shapes.
It.
Yes.
Okay. So the colors of a checkerboard. Okay, got it. And then, but as far as like I said, one of the people on my Twitter feed who we follow each other. Was saying I still want one of those shirts, and you know, well, what's accounting for taste? I'm fine. It doesn't bother me if people like it. I really don't care. I don't think they're nuts or anything. She tends towards the bizarre and the novel, which is, you know, I think almost a given if you're an American who loves Chinese, Korean, and Japanese baseball. So Deanna Rubin is in Japan now, and she was saying, okay, yeah, to each his own. I don't like them. But the reason I don't like them today, because we had this discussion, or there was this discussion in my timeline, the reason I don't like them is because they're not designed to be fan-friendly, because you can't read the names. They're large. The letters are very bold. They're bold. It's a very bold font. There's very little space between the different strokes and the characters. And they have the first and last name. And the Japanese guys are last name first, and the foreign guys are first name last. And they arc in a semicircle from one side of their back to around the numbers to the other. And the numbers are the same color, and they're in the middle of that
basically
mess.
Everything that I just said. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And she's going like, there's zero. And this is the irony. There's absolutely no appeal. There's no benefit to the fans of those uniforms. There's nothing about those uniforms that actually make it good for the fans, other than selling the shirts. Okay. Now, how absolutely fitting that is for Tsuyoshi Shinjo. Okay. Now I'm going to cast aspersions, because we've got somebody who's basically all about the fans and service, but in fact it's all a show.
It's a disservice.
It's zero about the fans. It's all about him, and it's all about selling things. And the idea that it's for the fans, and it's, you know, this is for the fans and for the entertainment value, is baloney, for lack of a less family friendly word.
I'm with you. Yeah.
So it's a perfect compliment for a team led by Tsuyoshi Shinjo to have a completely dysfunctional uniform.
Yeah. Like I said, rumors of his demise have been greatly exaggerated the big boss's demise, because he's still there. He took that uniform off and buried it figuratively.
Well, you
at the end of last season, but
they're all wearing red undershirts except Shinjo.
He's got it. He's got the V cut with the chest out.
I'm not certain he had anything on there.
With the chest out, baby, and shaved.
Yeah, showing his chains.
Although I did talk to somebody at work, I think maybe I said it on the show last week, maybe I didn't say it on mic, that the reason he's still wearing a mask is because his latest plastic surgery didn't work out so well, and he's hiding the scars.
Well, Well, that's one possibility.
It's definitely a possibility. Anyway, MBB has to establish some guidelines. Somebody's got to step in, and we've got to say, okay, your uniforms have to have this, this, that, and the other. None of this, none of that, none of the other. And when two teams are playing, you have to have white and then a dark jersey, and only one team can do that, preferably the home team, or let the home team decide. But
exactly.
But again, if you let the home team decide and the other team's on the road and they didn't bring their other ones, you might have a problem.
Tell them in advance. I mean, this.
Well, have this all. Yeah. Yeah.
The fighters.
Have some coordination.
Well, you know, the fighters, they had originally, they were only, these were going to be home uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided, let's take the circus on the road. Take the circus on the road.
Exactly. Well, the only reason I say this is not, I mean, I don't like to look at them either, but here's what happens is you get these. People from overseas who see this thing, and it really makes NPB teams look cheap. It makes them, when you dress the players like clowns, it cheapens the branding of the league, in my opinion, and it just brings it down. And so that's part of it. The guy looks like a great player, but what's he wearing?
I'll tell you, I was having this discussion with a rugby fan, and I said, you know, you may not like it, but if you look at Super Rugby, their uniforms make the fighters' uniforms look classy, a lot of them, because they're just, again, bus crashes all the way. Like, yeah, there's some wild stuff going on in the Southern Hemisphere, man.
Okay. Well,
I wonder if it's, you know, is pot smoking legal down there, recreational marijuana? Must be in some countries down there.
Yeah, some countries, some states, you mean?
So in our country, in Japan, we don't have marijuana, but we have Tsuyoshi Shinjo.
Somebody needs to smoke him, if you know what I mean.
Ooh.
All right, let's move right along, make a two-seam transition. Now, we did not have Rockin' with Roki, his segment, on last week, and we were thinking that we were going to have one on this week, but he had a blister. We thought he was going to be pitching actually tomorrow on Sunday.
He was supposed to pitch Sunday.
They've actually moved that to the 28th. So
yeah,
we probably won't even have a Rockin' with Roki segment for next week either, because he won't be pitching until Sunday.
But I have a question for you, because this occurred to me last night. Because in 2016, we went through this. Shohei Ohtani got a blister on his finger at the end of May or the beginning of June.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't pitch again for like a month and a half. But during that time, I mean, a month and a half for a blister is like, yeah.
It's like 2 weeks.
Like, what were they doing?
Right?
What were they doing? Rubbing it up with sandpaper on a daily basis. Anyway, during that time, he was batting every day, which was part of the plan. And the fighters didn't need him because they got a bunch of guys coming in from the bullpen who all worked great in the starting rotation. And they took their dysfunctional starters and put them in the bullpen and worked like clockwork, and they won the pennant. But for about half of those 6 weeks, Shohei Ohtani would go to the bullpen at some ballpark around Japan, and Masato Yoshi was the pitching coach, and he'd go, he threw a bullpen today, and how'd it go? He's good. He's ready. He's ready. And then we wouldn't see him again for another week. He'd do another bullpen and following week. Oh, good. Everything's fine. He's ready. He's ready. And it was like, well, if he's ready and he's your best pitcher and you're in a pennant race, what's he doing not throwing? You know, what's he doing not pitching? Oh, yeah, he's going to come. Yeah, he's ready. He's ready. And so the story, now Masato Yoshi, now manager of the Lotte Marines, is going, oh, we pushed him. His blister is fine, and he's ready to go as a pitcher. But we're having him start a week later because it rained Friday. And I'm thinking, yeah. No, I'm thinking, no, there's a story there, and Yoshi's not telling us.
Yeah.
And just like with Ohtani, now, of course, we learned after he went to the Angels, or maybe it was, I guess it was the winter he went to the Angels, we learned that he had a shoulder problem. that he had surgically corrected after the 2019 season, and that essentially wiped out his 2020 season. And I'm guessing that those things were related. The whole non-story about his blister.
You're talking about Ohtani or
Shohei Ohtani, right? So I'm guessing that the one thing the Marines were not going to do this year was deactivate Roki Sasaki because his body was not responding, recovering from the inflammation from one of his starts. And my guess is that's the real reason we're not going to see him until the 28th.
Okay.
None of this, it rained on Friday. You know, that's a American Republican, the dog ate your homework and misled your informant kind of explanation. You know, our dog ate our whistleblower. That's about the caliber of that excuse. He's fine, but we're not pitching him. Right.
Okay. All right. Let's make a two-seam transition. And we did lose a legend from the past. Actually, we lost this
on May 11th.
Yeah. So Futoshi Nakanishi, we learned on Thursday, passed on May 11th. And he's a five-time home run king. He died at 90. Like I said, we learned on Thursday, but the 5/11 was the date of him passing, so we didn't know for a while. Now, I watched some old highlights of his. I heard many talking reverently about him, and I saw a YouTube video of him talking about hitting and how to time up, not just the kind of swing that you're taking, but time up your swing with a slider to make the ball fly farther. Because apparently he played but he was a home run leader when the ball was basically dead. So yes. Tell us what you know about him and why he had such a huge impact in MPV.
It's hard for me to be kind of unemotional because he was for a while, this is before I get into him, I'll keep this. You can read my blog about him on jballisland.com. But just briefly, he was a coach for the Yakult Swallows for a time. And my guess is at that point, he bought a house near Jingu because he was forever at Jingu Stadium, either sitting in the dugout or more common, because most of the Swallows pregame batting practice is in the indoor facility across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he'd be camped out there on the bench near where watching the guys hit and helping everybody. I mean, he was just, you know, he'd talk to players and say, you know, I noticed something. Do you want to hear it? And if they did, and if they were receptive, you know, he'd work with guys and help them. And I know he helped Kazuhiro Hatakayama with the Swallows, and he helped Shuichi Murata with the Bay Stars. And he tried one of my favorite stories. He tried to help Yuki Yoshimura, who was a slugger for the DeNA Bay Stars. And at the same time, Shuichi Murata was there. And one day I was asking him, we were talking, and Murata walked by and he says, "You tell Yoshimura basically to get his head out of some part of his body because it's stuck there. He's not listening. He's not doing what he said he'd do. And you tell him that." And Murata says, "You're not going to tell him?" He says, "He's not listening and I'm done talking." But I just love the heck out of him. But he was an interesting guy for a number of reasons. He was, as you said, the 50s were a dead ball from about 1952 to about 1950 till about 1959 were a dead ball era. And his life was, his baseball career was really also the rise and fall of the Nishitetsu Lions. The Nishitetsu Lions were a 1950 expansion team, and they had a brilliant manager, former Giant Osamu Mihara, and he did all these he was a radical iconoclast kind of guy who If you remember Akira Ogi, he was a big student of his, and they were a big swinging, big home run hitting a team in a country where home runs were really not a thing in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And the 50s were their heyday, and Mihara moved on. I don't know why he moved on, but he went on to manage a couple of other teams later on, particularly the 1960 Japan Series winning Taiyo Whales. But when he left, after a couple of years, the Nishitetsu Lions kind of fell into disarray. And at the same time, Nakanishi was a guy who, like he says, the first 7 years of his career were like the seven, you know, I would have to compare it with very similar to the seven best years, consecutive year stretch of Sadahara Oh's career.
Wow.
He was that kind of an impact player. And then he had tendonitis in his left wrist. And at the time, and this was about 1958, at the time there was really no knowledge of how to treat it. So it was mistreated. So instead of like resting for taking 3 months off for it to rest and heal, he basically played through it until it just got so bad, he was never the player he was again. And he spent the last 9 or 10 years of his career as a shadow of his former self in many ways. Like after his injury, the Lions became a shadow of their former selves. And he managed early in the 60s, he managed the Nishitetsu Lions' last championship, 1963. And he was also the manager when they were the center of the Black Mist match-fixing scandal in Japan. And basically after that, the Nishitetsu Lions were toast. They were a ghost, a dead team walking for 7 years, 7 or 8 years in Fukuoka before Seibu bought them and moved them out. But, you know, that was like his career. But he went on to be a well-respected coach with every Pacific League team. He coached the Blue Wave, the Kintetsu Buffaloes. He never coached Hankyu before they were the Blue Wave, but he coached with every Pacific League franchise, managed the Hanshin Tigers, coached with the Giants, and coached with the Swallows. So
made the rounds. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Well, he was a fixture in Japanese baseball, and he's going to be missed so much.
Yeah, that's what I heard a lot of talk about him that starting on Thursday and then Friday. And it just sounded like he was a diamond on the diamond, and everybody's really going to miss him. So may he rest in peace.
Indeed. Indeed.
Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this question comes from our buddy Dave, and I always say Baltimore, and he hasn't corrected me yet, so that's where he is.
Yeah, until he says Maryland. He's not Canadian, you're a Canadian.
Oh, gosh. MPB Reddit. Oh, geez. All right, quick question for the podcast, he writes. If Lars Nootbaar wanted to play in MPB, would he have to go through the draft? My first thought was no, but I'm not sure how his situation is different from Gosuke Kato's. The only other comparable situation that I'm aware of was Michael Nakamura, whom the Marines were going to sign, but then suggested he go through the draft so that he didn't have to count toward the foreign player limit. A great plan that was foiled when the Fighters took him in the fourth round, 2 picks before the Marines could. There was a question about this on MPB Reddit, as apparently a commentator in Japan suggested that the Dragons try to sign Nootbaar, ignoring the whole under the contract to the Cardinals thing. So thanks, says Dave. So I did a couple things when I saw your question, Dave. I first went to Japanese Wikipedia and I read about Michael Nakamura. And what Japanese Wikipedia said was because Michael had a Japanese passport. Now, I don't know that he didn't have another passport, but I know he had a Japanese passport. He could only enter MPB through the draft. So it wasn't that it was the best idea and it was specifically to not count against the foreign quota, but that he had a passport. So that's how you are that's how you entered NPB if you are passport carrying Japanese, which he was, because he was born in Nara, I think it was. So then I reached out to Michael Nakamura himself. You might recall a few years back, he was on the show once. We did an interview. So I said, hey, do you have time to answer a question or answer some questions about your process that you went through? And he was super gracious and he took some time to reply. So thank you very much, Michael. And Michael offered the following. He said, yes, teams, keyword there, wanted to draft me to free up a foreign spot. I always had a Japanese passport. I was born in Japan. And yes, I thought I was going to be a Marine. The fighters had the draft pick ahead of them, the draft pick ahead of him, not two. So that's what Michael recalls. I'm not sure where your sources are, Dave, but he says the draft pick ahead of them. So that's how I ended up going to the fighters. It was probably a blessing because the Marines had such a solid and locked bullpen. So that's what he told me. And like I said, I read his Wikipedia story there that he had gone to the States and had pitched in the minor leagues there and pitched a little bit in the majors and blah, blah, blah. So what did you find out, Jim?
Well, the rule is I think, no, I had never heard the story about the Marines before, so that is interesting. But if he, Japan's rules, so many of Japan's rules are so different from MLB rules. And I don't want to go, I could expound on this for several hours and nobody wants to hear that.
Yay.
So
we do just shorten it and compact it into 2 minutes.
Yeah. Right. I'm really good at that.
No comment.
I knew that would get his laugh from John. Okay. No, basically if NPB knows you're a Japanese citizen, now Japan does not officially permit dual citizenships if you're over 20 years old. If you're a legal adult in Japan, you technically can only be a citizen of one country. However, most countries are not in the habit of informing other countries of who is and who is not one of their citizens. Therefore, it is very common for people who have dual citizenship and multiple passports as children to continue to hold dual citizenship and multiple passports as adults. It's very common. It happens a lot. So if Michael Nakamura was had an Australian passport as well, and that's all he talked about, it would have been very possible for a team to hire him as an import player. But again, hiring somebody as an import player means you don't have to go through the draft, but it also the roster restrictions in Japan say nothing about who is and who is not Japanese. It's not a foreigner quota. It's a draft quota. There's a quota on all players in Japan who do not enter through the NPB draft. So that's how they control that. If a lot of foreign nationals are excluded from the quota because they enter through the draft by playing amateur ball in Japan. Now, so that is possible that he had two passports and therefore teams had an option before it became known that he had also had a Japanese passport, because once that cat was out of the bag, he fell into the same category with Gosuke Kato, who, although he grew up in America, was born to Japanese citizens, American permanent resident Japanese citizens in America, who passed on their Japanese citizenship to their son, although he could have become an American citizen. Apparently, he's very likely also a dual national. Mm-hmm. But because everybody knew he was a Japanese national, that was it wasn't feasible that he would sign outside the draft. Now, with Lars Nootbaar, as far as I know, he does not have a Japanese passport.
Right. And the key phrasing there, as far as we know, because I want
to. Yeah. So
I
until
to
somebody, until somebody, somebody rats him and his mom out. Sorry, Kumiko. Son, unless somebody rats him out, he would not have to go through the draft.
Yeah. I was trying to think of who could I shoot an email to who could get that answer to me. Quickly, and there's just no one I know.
No, I would pretty much leave that alone because A, what people's nationality is ain't none of my business.
Hey man, there's nothing wrong with asking the question. It's how they choose to answer it. And if they have no comment, they just don't have to get back to me or they don't have to say anything. But I can ask the question for sure.
True enough. No, that's true enough.
And I'll ask it. I don't care.
And oh, that's
yeah, the
true.
Dragons. The Dragons, I honestly think Lars Nootbaar can smell the Dragons and the way they're playing from St. Louis. So I don't think he wants anything to do with that.
Well, his grandfather lives in Saitama, so maybe the Saitama Cebu Lions. But of course, that would mean having to play at the Cebu Dome, which nobody wants that either.
No, yeah. Yeah, whatever it's called. I call it Sabre Dome, Baluna Dome. We know what the name is. We're tired of trying to keep track of
the dome formerly known as Prince.
Hey, it's Seibu Kyujo Maya is the name of the station, and that's Sabre Dome to me.
Well, Seibu Stadium, actually, but yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, dome since it became a dome, since it, you know, we don't have to worry about the rain. So,
okay.
So it's an interesting story. I just think, the whole Michael Nakamura thing was an interesting story. It played out the way it played out. He had a really good career here. I did ask Michael, I said, Michael, you know, we'd love to have you back on. And he said, well, I'm going to be taking a trip in a couple of weeks here. I said, hey, man, I'll call you later, sometime later this year, or I'll drop you a line. So it doesn't have to be tomorrow or anything. Don't worry about it. But really appreciated him getting back to us. That was awesome.
That was awesome.
And we, you know, I will do definitely shoot out an email, see if we can find out about Lars Nootbaar, because that was one of the questions I asked him. If Dave, if you remember when he was on the show, it was just a standing interview after a Samurai Japan practice at Tokyo Dome during the warmups for the WBC. And I asked him, hey, you know, when do you think you might see playing in Japan in your future? And he said, well, look, I'm young, you know. I'm like, yeah, right, dude, 26, 27, that's about the age, so you were only talking a couple more years. You ain't that young. Yes, yeah, so you should be thinking about
that's the problem
here.
These guys go to university, they don't get they don't have that extra little cushion.
Yeah, it might be about the time. And if he doesn't tear it up, I mean, he's having a good, season here. He's a good defensive player. But he would just be so popular here in Japan anyway. And it looks like he had made an adjustment to facing Japanese pitchers. But of course, that was a tiny little sample size as well. So, I don't know. I would like to see him over here because he's such a good guy. Even Hideki Kuriyama talked about the fact that he was such a good guy. Once he talked to him, he just wanted to have Lars on the team. So I can imagine Lars coming here and being a big star and being on posters and having commercials. And
he doesn't even have to come here to be on posters and have commercials.
We
he's all over
more
the place.
Posters. Yeah, posters.
Yeah, well, I think. The thing with him is he's you know, I want to say this because so much of getting to MLB is chance. There are so many players who can be quality MLB players who do not, you know, the timing is terrible. They, you know, they get hot when nobody's watching, you know, and the scouts are there. They have a terrible day. They're sick. They got a fever, whatever. It's not as often as it used to be because people are aware of what happens. You know, they send scouts to look at people whose numbers are outstanding, and eventually, you know, and they ask the question, why are his numbers outstanding? You know, what's he doing right? That didn't used to be the case, but there's still luck involved. You know, you can't go up to MLB and if you don't make the adjustments in the time allotted to you by your random manager, which, you know, it could be five at bats. If you don't get it done, you could be suddenly labeled as a guy who can't, you know, as a 4A player. Well, the thing with Lars is that he's never, you know, he made the adjustment in the, he made the adjustments in the allotted amount of time. If he hadn't, he would perfectly fit the profile of guys who come to Japan in their 20s. But he did, you know, so many guys come here who came before they figured it out at the right time. And then they, those guys became Tuffy Rhodes and those, you know,
Alex
and those
Ramirez,
guys became Alex Ramirez. Although I think it's hard to tell about Alex Ramirez because his age is, you know, something
murky.
Murky. and he'll tell you the same thing. It is murky. He says he doesn't act. He actually told me he doesn't actually know how old he is.
I was going to say, can't find that birth certificate. So your guess is as good as mine, bro.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's a thing. That's the profile. Most of the guys who come here in their 20s are guys who can really play, but just have had terrible timing. And some of those guys go back to MLB and they really kick butt once they get there. Mm-hmm. And some of them don't, but that's the way it is. So he doesn't really fit the profile. His next window for playing in MLB is probably when he's about 34, 35.
You're talking about Lars?
Lars Nootbaar, yeah.
Playing in MLB.
NPB, excuse me, in NPB. Playing in Japan would be when he's in his mid-30s, probably.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you then. We'll be here.
I hope so.
Yeah, you just stay out of the hospital. All right.
Yeah, that's my plan.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, Dave. I really appreciate
Indeed.
The question and awesome talking point. Anyone else who has a question or a talking point or some criticism or some suggestions, whatever you've got, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email. Especially MP3s, just use your smartphone, put it in there, and then shoot it on over to yakyujohn@gmail.com or go to the Facebook page and leave us a note there. Look for us on Google Podcasts or iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Be at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.